Can you introduce yourself, please?
My name is Richard Hernandez, and I have been, you know, in these activist marches for the last, you know, 8-9 years, and on and off, you know, throughout the first Gulf War.
So you've been coming to these for a while, and what do you think? Does it make a difference? Have you seen any change happening?
Well, a long time ago, at the outset of the first Gulf War, I absolutely wanted to join the, you know, the Marine Corps, and because I had a minor criminal an offense, I didn't get to enlist, you know. And
what made you want to join the old Marine Corps?
Well, not just the Marine Corps, but just, you know, the military, because I thought, like everybody else at the time, that I was going to be, you know, doing something big. At the time, I was kind of like a thrill seeker, because I thought I was going to do something big, because I was going to be, like, serving our country and, you know, in the old great American way, go over, you know, yeah, in... A righteous war, and maybe at the time I didn't quite agree with it, but I thought, y'all, hey, y'all, it's y'all, what America's all about, or what I was taught to believe in, y'all.
But you had a criminal record of some sort.
Yeah, a minor criminal record, and so that kept me from not enlisting, y'all.
Sure.
And so maybe that was a. That was a good. That was probably a good thing, because, you know, who knows if I what would have been, you know, if I would have been accepted to sign up voluntarily, you know, I maybe would have gotten killed in Gulf War One. I would have got killed in Gulf War One, or I would have came out with, you know, with a missing leg or in a wheelchair.
You're taking your chances, no doubt. So how did you find yourself at peace rallies after wanting to volunteer for the military?
Well, you know, I knew, you know, a lot of people, you know, that were and started, you know, in circles with people that were against war, and, you know, I would say that these people, that were against, you know, wars, and for social movements, and so I, you know, decided, you know, to join, in these peace movements, y'all.
Right on. I'm asking a lot of my guests, since we have so many different people out here for so many different reasons, if they could just say a little bit about their life. You mentioned you were thinking about joining the military. How old were you for that?
I was 26.
26. And had you grown up in this area? Are you from Portland?
Yes.
And you went to high school here?
Yes, I went to high school here.
Which one?
Centennial.
Centennial. I didn't know that. Where's that?
Centennial is a few blocks off 170th and Division, y'all. Almost, maybe close to 82nd, y'all.
Okay. What about after that?
After that, y'all, I worked for like quite a few years with a local food vendor, Shelley's Honkin' Huge Burritos, y'all.
No kidding. What'd you do there?
Well, basically, I didn't serve any of the food. Basically, I just, you know, cleaned the cart, and I washed this, and I helped load all the stuff on the truck at the end of the day.
That was a pretty good gig for you?
Yeah, that lasted for a good almost 10 years.
Wow. And good burritos?
Yes, and they're vegetarian, you know. And when I met Shelley, you know, I got to know more about the anti-war movement, you know, in the political, become more political conscious. I think, you know, even when when I was young, I always had a political conscience, and one of my first, I would say, kind of really awakened, my family, we used to go visit people in this town called Chihuahua, Mexico. It's like almost 300 miles south of El Paso, and so I'm not Hispanic, but I have a Hispanic Mexican name, and so I from that time I've learned how much different things were there compared to here in the United States.
In what regard then?
And how there is a major divide between the rich and poor.
You saw that in Mexico?
Yeah, and so it was obvious in Mexico, where the wealthy have all the control, and the poor have nothing. They're almost basically like no middle class. There's no middle class. It's the poor. It's the poor and the rich. And the rich have all the power, and kind of like to certain steps with like Mexico and the cartel stuff. With the power of money and corruption, they can almost buy the government officials. It is seems to be the ultimate corruption. To a certain extent, with like money, they can almost buy out the local officials, and it looks pretty obvious. Local police in Mexico don't make all that much money compared to American police, and it's easy for the cartels and the criminals to hijack the systems because they have money. And the drug money pays a lot, is worth a lot of cash.
Sure, you mentioned the division of wealth there. So what do you mean when you say people were poor? How did they live?
Well, a lot of them, I'd say some of them don't have running water, or a lot of them do have running water in their lifestyle is quite a bit different than it is in America.
So a poor person in America is not bad off compared to a poor person in Mexico. Is that a fair statement?
I would say that is a correct assumption. Here it seems that we have a lot of resources to a lot of resources to work for to work with. Unfortunately, now we are seeing less resources, and we are seeing corporate power taking control, and more people losing their jobs, and more people are losing their jobs and losing their health care, and where people and this thing is like the banks got bailed out, people got sold out, and we are seeing where the poor is rising, and we have like corporate power sucking up all the 1%, sucking up all the wealth.
Yeah, we see a lot of things wrong. What about some steps forward? What's going to be a brighter day for me and you?
Well, our brighter future seems to keep this movement alive, and we need true social movement, and this is what I feel. I voted for John Kerry, and I voted for Barack Obama in the two elections, and this is like one thing I see that we need definitely here in America badly is we have to have a strong a Green Party you know, I'm not. I'm not advocating, you know, that we all have vegetarian. We have a full choice for everybody, and it's obvious, you know, we are not getting that from the Democratic and the Republican.
Sure, there's no law against the Green Party, though. I mean, what's stopping us?
Yeah, it's like we need a ultimate, you know, we need a strong Green Party, and because I say this, you know, like people like Blumenauer, you know, and Ron White and our senators, and people like Nancy Pelosi, you know, they won't, you know, they did not, you know, in the opportunity to impeach Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld when they had the chance, when I would say almost 85% of the country or 90% of the country demanded they dropped the ball, and I don't see them as doing a big enough role as they can for the 99%, y'all, because they seem to be more concerned about, y'all, their money and their stock market, y'all, than the people, or they're competing for their stock value, you know, against the Republican Party. It's like a game of like poker and stock game against, you know, the Republican Party with the Democrats. It's like who can raise the most amount of money, you know, on the Democratic side, who can raise the most amount of money on the Republican side. And
yeah, I agree, we can do better than that, and getting some third party candidates seems like a pretty solid idea.
I believe, you know, we can do better, you know, in the presidential, you know, than like Barack Obama, because here, you know, we're still, you know, launching, you know attacks, you know, and for me, you know, it seems Obama might think that he's trying to use what they call, you know, less diplomat or stuff. I guess he just thinks, you know, the American public, you know, public opinion won't really see any difference, because he thinks he's a good guy, and yet he doesn't. I don't think he wants to, in Guantanamo, he wants to keep all these, you know, these policies, you know, from the Bush administration, to keep practice them, and think, you know, the public is not gonna bat an eye, that nobody's gonna you know, see the difference, y'all.
Yeah. And thanks for stopping by KBOO today. I really enjoyed talking to you. Put her there, pal. Good luck to you.
So was that recorded on the radio?
Sure, it's going out live.
This is Joe Meyer with KBOO Radio. We're broadcasting live from Freedom Rectangle. Main Street runs right through it. And if only they would rearrange these tents a little bit, we could have a beautiful proof of the Pythagorean theorem. We're on the hypotenuse between 3rd and 4th at the KBOO tent, and we're happy to have another guest from the legal team. Sir, would you introduce yourself and tell us what you're doing out here?
Yes, my name is Randy Romine. I am with the Criminal Defense Legal Observation for Occupy Portland.
Well, how'd you attain that austere position?
My position here is I have a team that we are established here in Portland. It's kind of unique, and I'm trying to do it throughout the United States in different aspects. We have a 24/7 onboard legal team.
Right here at the occupation.
Right here at the occupation.
Where's your tent then? Let's give that out.
My tent is in the B section over here. We are right across from the kids' camp. I am available 24/7. If I'm not there, there is a contact number that I can be reached. I do live on site. I have been here myself since day two. And I have a criminal defense team here established in Portland. In case there is any illegal arrests, we observe with the police. We make sure that things stay within the perimeters that may call for immediate defense if any of the leaders and or people of Occupy Portland are arrested.
Have you guys been called out at all?
I have not been called out at this point in time. We monitor any arrest that takes place inside of Occupy Portland.
And there were a few of those on Main Street, I guess.
We had a few when we first took off. Unfortunately, my team did not come on board until right after that, the day that we were arrested.
Well, did you get familiar with that case, though?
We are familiar with it. They were arrested. We know that two were not released. At this point in time, we have not really followed through on that.
What were they charged with?
Well, disorderly conduct, blocking. I personally have not followed through on it, which is what I have a paralegal at this point in time trying to follow up on those particular cases. Unless they approach us at this point in time and ask for legal representation, there's not much I can do. You know, what we're doing is if somebody with Occupy Portland, let's say, is living here and he's down at 7-Eleven and something takes place off of site that is a legal matter, we're really not going to jump out at that point in time for defense. If it regards Occupy Portland, whether it be a civil matter or arrest for protest or something regarding staying in Occupy Portland, then we are here 24/7. We will be there before the ink dries at that point in time.
Do you offer legal advice as well?
The only legal advice that I have instructed that we do, if we feel it is pertinent, I do give minor legal advice. We have people come through that have homeless issues. You know, we have foreclosure issues.
Anything you can do for those folks?
We do something for them. We give them a generalized where to go at this point in time. If I can direct them, I will, you know, try to tell them what forms need to be filled out, how to block it. We have one gentleman that is part of Occupy Portland that had kind of a personal matter while he was here against Wells Fargo Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And Wells Fargo Bank froze all his accounts without too much notification, and all of a sudden he couldn't withdraw any funds.
What was their pretense for doing that?
Their pretense was he had a credit card debt,
okay,
which he has, you know, willingly, and he is willingly to pay this credit card debt. The point of the matter is Wells Fargo froze his whole account, and supposedly through one of the collective agencies which it had gone to, hired by Wells Fargo, was not done correctly. At this point in time, I have turned him over to one of our criminal defense teams. Even though it is really not part of Occupy Portland, it is something regarding the banks.
It's helping the people out.
It's helping the people out. So I've asked our criminal defense attorney who's on board, who's a very well-known attorney here in Portland, who's volunteered her services to look at the case.
Go team.
And that's basically what I can do is give generalized information. I'm not here to have everybody running up to me.
Sure.
You know, with issues that are not really pertinent to Occupy Portland. Although I will listen and I will read anything and respond, any phone call, to the best of my ability.
How about this? When you get a credit card, what's all that stuff you sign with all that small wording?
Well, the small wording is, and a lot of people don't bother to read when they open up a credit card account or a bank account. The fine line and the fine print can get you. The interest rates can get you. What we're talking here is a garnishment issue. Well, we have a credit card company, whether it be Visa or MasterCard, has filed with Wells Fargo Bank a garnishment against this young gentleman. He is a businessman. He's trying to establish himself here in Portland, and he's also a student. He does acknowledge that he does owe the debt, and he has no problem with it paying this debt. My problem is they froze his whole account above and beyond what is owed. Can I do anything personally? No. What I've asked is I do have a team of lawyers that are here in Portland that have volunteered their services, and we're kind of unique in the United States, and I'm getting calls from all over the United States at this point in time.
In terms of the witnessing or in terms of legal advice?
They have legal advice. Some of the Occupy sites in the United States does not have an on-site legal team. Okay. We have a scattering of legal team, which I didn't think was correct. So what I did is I actually made the legal observation committee, defense committee for Occupy Portland, period. But I am open to help other cities at this point in time that have had arrests and they didn't have attorneys present. Yeah, a lot of them were taken to jail. They're sitting, whether they were cited and released, if they were kept in jail, they had to wait for a public defender. I'm trying to avoid that.
Sure.
What I would like to do is, if it's within the realm of what we are doing, then we are there 24/7. I will turn it over to one of our criminal defense team, and they will be there at this point in time and say, hey, you have an attorney. You know, at this, you're not alone in this matter. And that's where we stand. At this
that
point.
Sounds great. This is Joe Meyer. We're broadcasting live from Freedom Rectangle. Main Street runs right through it. I'm talking with Randy live. We're talking about the legal defense team. Randy, you've been listening for a while. You know I always ask all my guests to tell them a little bit about their path because we've all come from so many different places, and yet we're all here. So I wonder if you could just say a little bit about the arc of your life and how you ended up here. You mentioned you were a lawyer. You're a retired lawyer, I guess.
Yes. I was disbarred many, many, many years ago.
But you were born in Portland. I want to start at the beginning.
No,
now.
I was born in Washington State.
Washington State, okay.
Washington State, and between Washington State and California.
Okay.
And other aspects of the United States.
Between Washington State and California, that's Oregon.
Well, Oregon was in between.
I get you.
Oregon was in between. I have been a activist for quite a while regarding civil rights matters.
Okay.
Involved with homeless advocacy.
But you got a good education, apparently.
I have a very good education. I had numerous public high schools,
college,
numerous universities.
You ended up with a law degree.
And I ended up with a Juris Doctorate degree. And,
did you teach? Or?
No, I didn't teach. At this point in time, I went into the restaurant, hotel, casino management as a legal representative for them in the private sector. This is when I was part of corporation.
Okay.
And money making. It was all about putting a big dollar in my own pocket.
And were you doing pretty well in that regard?
I did very well in that regard.
Okay.
Unfortunately, many years back, my involvement overlapped with some of the federal investigations taking place on casinos in Nevada and throughout the United States that I was involved with. Consequently, I kind of had a life change. And my life change became non-materialistic. I don't care about the Corvettes. I don't care about the big homes. And for the last 10 years, basically, I have been out here on different movements throughout the United States to show my support and at least help correlate and put back my life skills and my education skills for people that maybe need them.
You've been doing that for about 10 years now?
For about 10 years now.
And what about the gross national happiness? Has that increased in your case?
And the gross national happiness? Well, that's a broad, very broad question, Joe.
How about the Randy national happiness?
The national, yes. I was always seeking, was I happy?
Yeah.
And, you know, I had the Corvettes, I had the big homes, the women, you can name it. You know, I thought my name was Hugh Hefner at this point in time. And I lived that lifestyle for many, many years.
Yeah.
And the rug was pulled out from under me. And once that rug was pulled out from under me, I saw that the people I had known, and don't get me wrong, there are business leaders and some judges and attorneys I do know out in the United States. I became not the black sheep, but I realized I would never reach that plateau ever again. I had buried myself off to the side. You know, I had gone just a little wild in their eyes. Do they acknowledge me as a friend? Are they sympathetic to what I do? Yes, some of them are. Some of them are. There are many, many people within the realm of legal, all the way from a federal judge down to a traffic court judge that sympathize with us, and there are those that empathize. They're a big difference. And those are the ones that, like, when I walk into a restaurant, or I used to belong to country clubs and Elks clubs and things of this nature. I no longer.
Golf, all that stuff.
Golf, all that good stuff. I would come in, but of course, I was in a part of law at this point in time that they disagreed with. You know, I was representing, or I was a legal observer for, let's say, a hotel casino that's under major indictments and investigations throughout the country. So it was, how you doing? They'd send a drink over to my table, give me the wave, but please don't come to our house for dinner type thing.
I get you. Well, it sounds like your life transition was smoother than some. Am I reading that right? I mean,
my life transition was not really smoother. I had to pay my dues, as everybody does. And I decided that I would, you know, seek different career, you know, and I am still up in the air on what it is, okay?
Yeah.
I live on site here. I survive wherever I go. Right now, my basic is I travel between the state of Washington and to the Mexican border, San Diego, in different cities. And I try to basically live off the streets as a homeless. I try to live as comfortably as I can, naturally, but I become part of them. If I can open the door for just one person, if he's sincere, I have a little education, middle life skills, knowledge, I'll do that. You know, I have people that they would like to go to school. They have no idea. Well, I have no money. You know, how do I go to school? Well, there are so many grants and so many ways that you can get into a school. But the average person, the average young man or woman on the street have no idea how to open that door.
Yeah.
And that's what I try to do. I'll open a door for somebody.
Yeah, I do feel like it's a natural human desire to help other people.
That's exactly what my calling has been.
Yeah.
And I have decided that's what I do. I came to Occupy Portland. I observed for 2 days what was going on, and I decided to establish this. We had another legal entity here, the National Lawyers Guild, which I am not a part of, and yet I will work hand-in-hand with them with my defense team. These are students from law school observers. They're not on site. They're volunteer students that may come in and walk around with a green hat. At this point in time, I haven't even been approached to them. So because of this, I decided that I needed to establish something for Occupy Portland itself.
You're going
to
be on site.
I am on site. I will be here no longer, whatever it takes, and try to help the other cities. I'm being inundated now with calls from different cities that have had arrests that didn't have, at this point in time, any kind of legal on site. And so I'm going to try to, at this point in time, branch this out a little bit more.
Oh, thanks for sharing all that with us. What's the good news coming out of this that you see? You know, what's the next step? Or what's, not even next step necessarily, I just mean, what's the good news?
The good news is Portland is a leader, as far as I'm concerned, throughout the United States at this point in time. We are very, very fortunate at this point in time that we have had no major conflicts. We've had some minor altercations that can be taken care of very quickly. There's been no major arrests. We have an infrastructure in here with our committees that work hand in hand with each other. So we try to keep everything as peaceful as we can. I am a peace advocate. I don't believe in violence. And I don't want violence. The parks where we're at, I can only say that regarding the mayor's office, his restraining what's taking place. Fortunately, Sam Adams is not running for re-election, but I do applaud him for what's taking place. The new knowledge that I have, and my team as we speak, are trying to verify this, is Park and Recreation's met today, and at this point in time, the park here, the dual parks here, have been taken off as far as Parks and Recreation to leave alone. Leave alone, that it looks like we're going to be here for a long period of time.
What does leave alone mean? Stop services? Or?
Well, they're not going to stop services. They do help clean the restrooms. They do know that there is always going to be some damage taking place throughout the public park.
Are they picking up trash here still, you know?
We are picking up trash. We are picking up trash, and I applaud our sanitation crew for doing this.
So Occupy Portland's doing their own trash?
If Occupy Portland is doing their own trash.
Yeah.
We try to assort the trash as it comes in. We have people come in, volunteers, part of the community that is coming through, and they go through and pick up the bags. They take them to a centralized place. And they try to sort as much garbage. And it's private people, citizens throughout the community, part of that have hauled this out for us.
So take it back to the dump.
And take it to a dump or take it to their house.
Oh, take it to their house even.
Yeah, we have people pick up a bag, come in with a pickup truck, and the guy say, give me a couple bags, and I'll take them so we can get them out of here.
Yeah. Well, Randy, thanks for sharing the good news today, and thanks for doing what you do, being on-site legal witness and legal advice. Thanks again. Anything else you want to tell our listeners before we sign off?
No. The only thing I would ask is that the listeners know that we are available to help and that we would hope that you would keep this within a legal realm, per se. If there is a problem, we would like to be able to handle this. We don't want police involvement.
Keep it peaceful.
Keep it peaceful. Please keep it peaceful down here. You'll see we're starting to put up signs. This is not a party. This is not a big party. We have our music. We have our certain little radical aspects of it, which everybody has freedom of expression.
Sure.
But let's keep it peaceful. Let's not antagonize. And if we can keep doing that, we'll remain.
Thanks again, Randy, retired lawyer and legal advice for Occupy Portland. Put it there.
Thank you, Joe.
Appreciate it. This is Joe Meyer. We're broadcasting live from Freedom Rectangle, and I see a gentleman with a sign that seems interesting to me. I want to see if I can get him over here. It says something about OC Seattle in crisis. If you're holding a sign that says OC Seattle in crisis, please check in at the KBOO booth. If you're carrying a sign that says Seattle in crisis, if you're holding a sign that says OC Seattle in crisis, please put on these headphones and tell us about it. My name is Joe. I'm with KBOO.
All right.
Put it there, brother.
Hey there.
Hey, we're going live on the stream, and it's good to meet you.
Hey.
I saw your sign, and I want you to. Yeah. I didn't hear about this.
Thank
it says OC Seattle in crisis. If I read it right.
Yep.
Would you like to introduce yourself and tell us about that?
My name's Nick Wadsworth. I currently have. I'm just about to be in contact with Outreach. I'm kind of a sole Outreach person. I've been on our forums a lot, trying to make sure we get enough traffic. It's kind of.
What do you mean forums now?
The Occupy Portland forums. We have. We don't have exactly as much traffic on there, so I'm trying to get as much input as we can, trying to help out a lot. And today,
that's a website with information about it. Is that occupyportland.org?
Yep, it's on Occupy Portland. It's actually in the PHBB forums, but there's a link right on there to the forums. It's on the Get Involved or something, and you just click it. It'll take you right there.
In the forums, is a discussion forum, basically?
Yep, it's just a forum of anybody who would like to support Occupy Portland from the distance, and they can't make it down here, but they can be, like a lot of IT workers can just be on their computers all day, and
There's
a lot of people like that on there.
Sure. Well, Nick, are you an IT worker yourself, or what's your role?
No, I'm just, I don't know, I'd say my specialty is getting people together.
Organizer?
Organizing. I don't have a formal, I'm trying to actually set up a guerrilla theater, but that's kind of besides my point here.
No, I think that's to the point.
I can put a plug on it here, too.
We're
hoping to set up a guerrilla theater. We're calling for any writers, poets, actors, obviously, with the eventual goal to maybe even have a sound and lighting crew involved, which would be awesome. We need prop makers. We need writers, especially, is what we need to actually make the... Make a
script or whatever.
Yeah, play we need to make a little skit.
Sure.
And we want to hop around the trams and get all over the place, hit up different spots.
And how can people get involved with that?
You can go onto our forums. I'm really the only person I've heard on Outreach that really, or I'm not on Outreach technically, but we're kind of a small group thing.
But when you say Outreach, that's a subcommittee?
It's the street team. It's not necessarily a committee. They don't actually meet at the GA or something like that. They have their own meetings. That's why it's been really hard to meet up with them. But, I mean, if I don't have to go through Outreach, I could make it myself. And I have... there was previously a person running a theater workshop who got me into this, and he's excited that I'm taking it on my own, myself to spread the word.
Right on. That seems like a constant theme. I see a lot of people go before the General Assembly, and then they say, well, we're not stopping you.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think
that's great. They empower everybody.
They empower everybody.
Level.
It's kind of like KBOO.
Yeah.
I volunteered there one day. I came in the next day, and they said, why aren't you writing the news? What are you waiting for?
Cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
So anyway, today I go on the forums just reading on all the new posts, trying to figure out what's up with today, what are the today's concerns. And somebody from Occupy Seattle actually was concerned enough to come outreach to our forums away from their boards, expressing in their own community that they have a clear divide. And it might be because Portland or Seattle is much larger than Portland, and they have more of a aggressive community there. They probably have a lot more street punk types. And apparently they have, instead of one GA, their General Assembly is divided into sort of like, in Portland we have a group of people who kind of like to celebrate in the camps. And
some people just want a warm meal and a place to sleep.
Yeah, exactly. But they have, instead of people just being here and maybe talking a little bit about how they're not really sure about GA, they have people who are potentially on the verge of riot. You know, profanity is towards the police, anger, tons of aggression. This lady is concerned that, myself, I'm concerned that there will be a negative media potential, and any sort of negative thing could make a rolling shutdown of all of the different occupations.
How can you work against something like that?
Work against it, I think, is just to specifically raise awareness about this issue. We all have issues inside of our own occupations. It shouldn't be focused on your occupation. It should be focused on the fact that everybody has these same types of issues across the whole movement.
Sure, about angry street kids in Seattle, what are you going to do to control that element if it's going to be a negative element to the movement?
Well, that's something that I think it was a female from the forums. This is the first thing that I've really gotten accomplished to raise this awareness. I'm not sure. I'm going to talk about it at GA.
Mm-hmm.
See if we can. I mean, the outreach is supposed to be communicating with other occupations as well, and I don't know if they actually are being actively communicating with these occupations. Why hasn't that been brought to our attention? And I honestly don't really hear too much from GA about other occupations.
Are the forums the best way to be informed about other occupations?
Well, it's a very fast way to communicate with each other if we don't have, like, if the phone numbers, and if people are very busy in their own occupations, there's not a lot of people who have time to get to computers or have internet access, but it is one of the fastest ways to do so, and you will get in contact with at least one person from that. And I don't know, we'll see if anybody comes up with any strategy. I only responded to her thing. I haven't seen any response from her, and I will certainly ask if she can coordinate with me on some strategy that we could tell, because she was just calling for help.
Sure. Is there any discussion about some people from here going up there to witness, to learn?
I was hoping to bring that up in the GA. I currently am maybe like it would like to gauge the response on some sort of a strategy like that. It might be good to have a committee that goes to different occupations, like a whole national occupation committee that unites us.
Shares the best of what's
everybody,
going on.
Make sure that we all set up one of those that specifically communicates with each other, not just an outreach that apparently doesn't seem to be being that involved. I can't find them very much. I finally just found a leaflet placed somewhere that information didn't know about that has all of the email addresses and phone numbers of people on outreach committee. But I went to information 5 times. Nobody ever gave me any information.
Yeah, but I think everyone's doing their best. I think
they're trying. We're good. We're doing as good as we can.
It's really interesting to me because some people are saying it's so inefficient, and yet maybe that's just part of the recipe.
Well, it takes time.
It just takes time.
We're babies.
Well, you want everyone to be heard. And what's your hurry? What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Let everyone be heard and make the right
hurry
choice.
About this is just specifically the fear of negative media.
Yeah. What do you think the
potential rioting?
What do you think the chances of any kind of violence here in Portland are?
Oh, I don't think we are getting too violent here. We're choosing to either go forth to GA, put our opinions out there, or more or less just kind of talk about it. We're not comfortable in camp. I haven't really seen any really coming together like that. There's nobody on the mics like saying that we should take to the streets or anything.
Yeah, yeah. Like it might be happening in Seattle.
Yeah, that is an issue.
That is an issue in Seattle. Well, I've asked all of my guests so far today, and I hope that you'll cooperate a little bit. Tell us a little bit about their own life, the arc of their own life. So many people are so many different ages. They're all here.
Yeah.
And I just wonder how you got here. Were you born in Portland? Or
oh, no.
Give us a trace if you would be so kind.
Sure, yeah. Well, I came from Des Moines, Iowa about just over 2 weeks ago.
Was it farming there? I guess it's a big, that's a city.
Right? Des Moines, Iowa is the largest city there. I'm more comfortable with city life. We don't have hicks really. I mean, the farmers market's the most we see of them. And
what about the organic food market?
Oh no, well, it's a lot less pervasive. That's the wrong word.
I think it's a good word. I think it's perfectly good word. And you went to public schools there, high school and grammar school.
Yeah, I went to high school there and basically landed in the lap of Occupy Portland. When I left. I lost communication with like the news media and everything. It was my first experience just traveling with a very low budget. First time I ever had hitchhiked. And
what made you want to come out here? Were you aiming for Portland?
I have friends that live here, but it was not defined. The general goal was Pacific Northwest. Actually, Seattle was the number one destination for me, but the amount of time that it took me to get here, I just sort of landed here, and Occupy Portland was just kind of waiting for us. I just came with a tent, you know, and I land here. My friends are like, "Well, yeah, there's a tent city up here over the way," and I'm like,
"And they've got really good food."
Yeah, it's really amazing. So I'm really appreciative that it did spread from Wall Street, because the last thing I knew, it was just Occupy Wall Street.
Yeah,
and this is what I've been about my whole life. I mean, when Zeitgeist came out, I don't know if you know what that is. It's about all of this stuff from the beginning.
Corporate power,
the 1%, and like when it started and what has led to it.
Was that the federal banks or what?
Yeah, the Federal Reserve was where we really got tipped over. But
I've heard a lot of people say that.
They used the tools that were set in place from the beginning of the spread of Christianity from the Roman Empire. That is just sort of like the tool that they clutched onto.
What was that tool called? Control the masses by something.
It's a very huge shroud that they made into something that makes you feel disempowered.
Just a new and improved way of disempowering the humans.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
Can we define it any better than that?
Consumerism.
Consumerism. Or
the concept of money itself to be used everywhere. They went in, you know, Romans come in, take you over, establish all of what they want.
Right.
If your little village was running on barter and trade, that has been cut off from any sort of future that could come into a society that would potentially continue the bartering system, cut down, no longer. And to basically just the lack of differential religions. They unified everybody.
Standardized religion.
Yep, standardized. They don't have to deal with other people's ideas.
Okay. Break down a community in a way, would you say, in that regard?
Yeah.
Or open discussion?
Breaking down the open discussion, breaking down even the concept of anybody openly discussing. That anybody who says something off from the norm is suddenly looked at as somebody to be punished.
Ah, yeah. So some way of fit in or else.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see as the good news out here today?
The good news out here today is that people are listening to me when I talk about why it's important that we even acknowledge. I don't know exactly what we're supposed to do, but not just acknowledging that Seattle is in crisis and we are having issues, just realizing that people are listening and understanding that it is everybody. It's not, I mean, we have hope, we have people who understand, and we have a lot of people out here that are open-minded, and that has specifically, the shroud has been taken off.
I really agree with that. I think one of the things that's going to be lasting, if the tents all leave tomorrow, we'll have made new connections with other humans, and we'll all have learned something.
Yep, everybody will have learned so much.
So I think that's a huge part of it, and I wonder if you have any more concrete ideas about what kind of change would make a better day for me and you. I mean, the movement has been hesitant to define too many specific things, and I want to respect that, so you can just simply take a pass on that, because I think you really already got the gist of it.
No, we just need to unite.
I think you're right about that.
We need to unite. Stop looking at each other's differences.
Learn from each other, like you say, if we can go to Seattle or get some tips on that.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I wanted to run by you, an earlier guest mentioned that police were going around town telling everyone who's living on the street what a great place this is.
Oh.
And I wonder if you think that would be a threat.
I actually just heard about that moments before That's a strategy.
I mean, it's a strategy. It's also not doing the guy a disservice because it's darn nice here. So what do you think about that?
I think that they are maybe potentially trying to coordinate with the media to make it apparent that this is just a bunch of homeless people or something instead of actual working class humans. Even though homeless people are humans, they are part of the 99%, just like everybody out there who's listening. Unless, for some reason, there's a giant CEO of a multinational corporation listening to KVU.
We'll take our chances in that regard.
You are out there, hey, man. You're not being very nice.
Anything else you want to say to our listening audience?
No, thank you for your time. Thank you for listening. And unite. Don't dissent.
Peace, brother. Let's leave it there.
Yeah. Hey, nice talking to you.
Yeah. This is Joe Meyer. We're broadcasting live, KBOO, Freedom Rectangle, downtown Portland. Main Street runs right through it. We're trying to put out as much live content as we can today. And an author just handed me a book called An Extraordinary Rendition. Henley Hornbrook, he's here joining me today. Henley, will you introduce yourself?
Yeah. Having a little trouble with the microphone here, but I came down today to the Occupy Portland gathering and brought my book, Extraordinary Rendition, because a lot of the story was written a couple of years ago, but it addresses a lot of the concerns I think a lot of the folks here have. The story is about how in the future corporations take over our government. And we start living in a state where we the government's called core gov.
Is that the future?
It's back then it was the future. I'm not quite so sure now. Okay. It looks at the world in terms of, okay, if we live through and everything is owned by corporations, would democracy still exist?
And when did you write this? When did you start?
2009.
2009.
Yeah.
So this is right after Obama got elected, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much.
And the term extraordinary rendition had come into our vocabulary at that point.
Yeah, but actually I was aware of these type of events. Actually, renditions have been occurring for, the last 20 years, right? But it was, since the Iraq War that we really start seeing this a lot in the secret prisons and that kind of thing. And so... it's like, what kind of a society, what type of a consciousness is there that creates these kinds of things in the world? And this book kind of explores that. It starts with this character that's in a corporate world, and he works, he does all the right things.
Middleman kind of guy? Or?
Well, no, he's kind of like the regular guy, like me, like you. He goes to work, he makes a living. And he never really pays attention to what's going on around him until one day his world changes. And in this particular case, what changes is his bank accounts get hacked. He becomes a victim of theft. And so his job is to stop corporate theft, so he has to go out and investigate. But in the future, what happens is when you vote, you don't vote for a candidate. You don't vote for one man, one vote. It's... how much money do you give to the winning corporation? How much stock do you buy in the corporation that wins the CEO presidency of the world?
So you vote by how many of dollars you can give to a candidate. That's your vote, $10.
Well, how much stock do you take in their corporation?
How much stock do you take?
And so, their stocks go up. Whichever CEO wins at the end of the day, whichever one stock goes up the highest, they're in control.
What about the other corporations who... didn't raise as much money? Are they still corporations, or do they have to give up their...
They're still corporations, and they're still playing the game.
Okay.
But they're not the head corporation. They're not making the most profits. But what happens to Dirk is he wakes up one morning, and he finds that he has to go and has to do this investigation. Well, through his investigation, he has to go and deal with these folks, which are called tweeners. Tweeners are the working class. They're people like me and you who go to work every day. But they're sort of the new untouchables. They're bred with, this is a sci-fi part of it, with DNA taken from space aliens, and which has an interesting impact on them because it causes an evolution in them. And the book postulates that the next evolution isn't intellect and it's not physical prowess. The next evolution is a spiritual evolution. And so the tweeners, the you know the untouchables, those folks that have to do all the work no good sapien wants to do, suddenly has closer contact with God. They have a closer contact with the way the world really could be.
Are the tweeners human, actually? Or
They're human hybrids.
Human hybrids.
Yeah. So they're blue. They got silver eyes.
What about their consciousness? Is it direct human or?
Well, they don't. Where they are in this book, where they start off at, is they're having to go through this consciousness change, kind of like the consciousness change we all have to go through here. This is the beginning of that change of consciousness, a consciousness that moves away from what's in it from me, to a consciousness of you know what's good for all of us, and what kind of world could we actually create if we really put our mind to it, and if we had that connection with God. What could we really turn this world into? And so tweeners don't understand this yet. They're on the cusp of understanding. They're on the cusp of becoming something more. And they start seeing the world, and they understand that this world that they're living in, what the biggest crime committed against them isn't what's been done to them. It's what was taken from them. What they could have been and what they could have experienced and what this world could have been.
Except for what?
Except for the fact that they weren't aware enough to make it different.
So they're only blaming themselves in a way.
Well, no, they're blaming. There's a system in place.
Okay.
There's this, and we see it today. You know, we listen to the news, and we hear the way that we are told the world is, and this is as good as it can get. You know, the best we can hope for is. Africa to be continued to starve. The best we can hope for is, maybe we'll make enough this year that we won't lose our homes, you know? That's the hope, the dream, the actual working into the world today of what could be versus what we're told it can be. It's one of the biggest things in the book that is the biggest crime that's being committed. But anyway, the book deals with the transformation of the main character, Dirk, because he finds out that although he's, he thinks he's better than the tweeners, in the book he finds out he's no different than anybody else. He's the same as they are.
He's got different DNA, I guess.
Actually, his DNA's been changed, too.
Okay.
Everybody has, and nobody really is quite aware of it. So towards the end of this book... what happens is he hooks up with a movement, a liberation movement of tweeners and sapiens and just a bunch of folks moving towards a different reality. And so it's with that awakening and a nonviolent movement that Dirk joins and starts to understand that there's really something better out there.
You talk about it like it's a cusp of consciousness, like it's not a gradual change. Is that what you mean?
Actually, it's the thing in the back of your mind that you always know is there, but you never, one day you just wake up and you realize it.
So it's an all of a sudden thing in that case.
Yeah, but it's the thing, it's like when you wake up with, it's like, how can I put it? It's like a memory that you had when you were a child, and you grew up and over the years you forgot what that was, and then one day you wake up and you actually remember what it was. So it's something that exists that you've forgotten.
Right. That's at the individual level. What about the community level? You talk about people coming together and achieving more of a group consciousness.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's an important thing because there is a group consciousness, and the group consciousness affects the individual affects the group. And, and in the book, it's an awakening, I suppose you could say. much like the awakening that we're seeing here and across the country and around the world.
A societal as well as individual.
Exactly, because you can't, one is like a hand in the glove, right? You can't have one without the other. You know, it takes the individual consciousness, the aggregate, to form the social consciousness.
What's the best news you see coming out of the camp when you walk through?
Well, you know, I think, you know, I hear a lot of criticism about the camp, that there's, you know, there's no one thing that's emerging.
No list of demands.
Yeah, and that seems to drive a lot of people nutty. Actually, I find it encouraging because there's something driving everybody here. It's a general dissatisfaction with the way the world is. And it's just that expression of dissatisfaction. We don't have to really, and this group doesn't really have to give a list of demands. Who are they to demand that anyway?
Who would they demand it of?
Exactly. I mean, my list of demands would be different than yours. So I find it reassuring that there have been people that have found a voice that can come out and say, well, look, the way that the world is right now, that potential that could have been my life, I'm kind of pissed about that and I didn't get it. And at least becoming aware that that potential was actually there for them.
Sure. So humans have almost the inalienable right to a certain quality of life.
I believe so.
But if you look at the kind of historical picture over the last 2,000 years, life's pretty good. I think I had a listener just the other day saying, compared to 100 years ago, we lived like kings. And I think that's true, objectively.
Well, I think it's true for some people.
Okay.
But I don't think it's true for a lot of people. And I think what we're finding, at least when I look around, there are more and more people who are not living like kings anymore.
Yeah.
And so...
Maybe it's not the absolute level of living like a king or a serf, but the change that we're experiencing that wakes us up.
Well, not only that, but when you think about living like a king, what did kings do? Kings had a lot of people that served them.
A soft bed, I mean.
Well, I mean, we certainly have comforts now that we didn't have then, but do we have the freedom now that we had then? I mean, today, can we actually go off and live in the wilderness by ourselves? We can't. There is no wilderness left, and what wilderness is there, the animals are becoming extinct.
Yeah.
Those days are over.
Yeah. Where do you think that idea came from, though, that you got this darn right to a certain quality of life? Where did that come from? In your novel or even in reality?
I think it comes from a sense of fairness. I think it comes from the fact that even for us that live comfortably, that we can look out our window, we can see those people that really worked hard, they did all the right things, they took out the student loans, they spent the years in college, and they come out with $50,000 to $100,000 in debt, and they have no potential to get a job.
That's just not fair.
It's not fair, and it's like, okay, why should I think that they should that they should be comfortable, or that they should achieve their dreams? Why shouldn't they be able to do that? And what is it about our society that says that that's okay, you know, as a group, you know, as all of us together? Why is that okay for that to happen?
That's something you explore in your book.
Actually, not so much.
Okay. I'm trying to get a good plug in there. I'll try again soon.
Well, that's okay. The book really is more about the transformation of the single individual.
Okay.
Realizing that there's more than making money. It's about an individual that realizes that the heart is really at the center of any kind of major change that's going to occur in this world. And it's at the heart of what's going to make a just society. It's at the heart of what's going to bring us closer, that one step closer, that evolutionary step closer to God. And so it's really the story of a transformation of a man who finds his heart.
Right on.
Yep.
Thanks for talking to KBOO today.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate your time.
That was fun.
Bye.